right, our next speaker is Tim Wallace, and he'll be speaking on the topic exploitation of social media by disinformation campaigns. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for staying to the end. So let's see, are these keys gonna go forward here? Page down. Oh man. Let's see. Oh man.
Forward, alt right arrow.
Maybe this alt. Seems like paging through a PDF in full screen mode shouldn't be the hardest thing that you do, but.
Oh man. Yeah. Forward. Maybe the best thing to do is just to do it like this, full screen.
Oh man.
Just page down.
It's not good because page down. All right. So. Putting this thing in context, this is the sixth talk on issues raised by digital technology. 2018 talked about AI and the artificial stupidity was really the problem identified there, and the singularity we also talked about. 2019, the cyber issue and hubris, capitalism kind of created our problems there. And it's interesting, but over to the right, there's a chart about an attack on the Ukrainian power grid by Russia. 2021, we got the social media, the companies monetizing our attention, creating a lot of social problems. 2022 talked about bias in AI, and that's a big problem. Last year, we talked about the Internet of Things, which is really misused by authoritarians and a big privacy problem for a lot of us. This talk is basically a sequel to the 2021 social media talk and also informed by the cyber talk. So what am I doing now? Alt, page down.
Just page down.
Oh, page down. Okay. So,
Can you remove your badge? It's bumping up against the microphone.
Okay. There he's on. Okay. So we're going to talk about the current social media situation, a little bit on how social media works, talk about foreign sources of disinformation, Qatar and geopolitics, and then we'll run through some quick recent examples of social media disinformation rather than give you a whole tutorial on how to do it. We'll just show how it's happening, and then the Christian perspective and outlook. So in my 2019 talk, I talked about Donna Freitas' book here, The Happiness Effect, which is a pretty good book, and she is a sociologist working on a shoestring, but she interviewed a lot of people who were using social media back in the day, heavy on case histories. Francis talked about the anxious generation, in his keynote, and that's a lot more research. Jonathan's got a big team. He's got a guy full-time working on this, and there's a lot more data in 2024 than there was in 2017 on the issues of social media. I recommend that one. Now, where do we get our news? A lot of us spend a lot of time looking at our phones, and social media is a big part of it. We share our photos, so it's easy to get some news at the same time. It fuels a trend away from traditional media. Pew Research is documented over to the right, and with social media, everyone gets a different experience. It's hard to tell how reliable the news sources are, and things are kind of complex now. U.S. laws about mass media ownership date to 1934, the Communications Act of 1934. People were concerned about foreign influence in the U.S. Australian, Rupert Murdoch became a U.S. citizen, famously, to launch the Fox TV network. Now, things have been relaxed in recent years. Ownership of social media isn't restricted to citizens, of course, so TikTok is a prime example of that. Even in ancient Greece, poetry was regulated so as to prevent excessive passions from corrupting the social order. So it's not a new problem. So what is disinformation? Well, misinformation is false or inaccurate information, but disinformation is when you deliberately intend to mislead. And in the case of social media, the information is that a person exists or a person is making this posting or has this opinion. So if there's fake accounts, I'll also consider part of this information, even if the post is true. The false part might be that that person believes that or that that person even exists. So dictionary.com says that this information's from the Russian word. So that's kind of ironic there. Now, you know, even the young aren't great at judging reliability. You know, us older guys might be the victims of internet scammers, right? We're not the digital natives. Well, this Stanford Graduate School of Education study showed that in high school students, 96% failed to consider fossil fuel ties in assessing climate change info online. And more than half were convinced by foreign disinformation about ballot stuffing in certain elections. So it's not just us. Okay, we're going to take a quick dive into how social media works. Basically, you have the algorithm is in the center of everything, the processing algorithm. And it provides posts of interest to the user. So the data comes here, posts and replies that people enter in. And then the user feed is what you see as a user. And the goal is to maximize user interaction with the app. And it's by definition, this is an algorithm. Now, moderation filters the processing. So it can block input posts. Traditionally, it's done for advertisers because really bad racist information, people don't want associated with their advertising material. But it can be done for other reasons. It can reduce the reach of disfavored political viewpoints. Often the human, moderation is the expensive part of social media. You got to hire a lot of people to do all that. Now, disinformation over social media, there's several ways you can do it. You can manipulate the input data here in the red. Anybody can do this in any platform. You can post false stories. You can make fake accounts. And of course, the astroturfing is when you pretend that a whole lot of people think something, but who those people may not even exist. If you control the algorithm, you're the owner, then you can block the posts by keyword, promote posts. You have all the power in the world, really, far more than moderation. And you can set up financial incentives. Now, regulation of ownership to combat disinformation could be a reasonable approach. And TikTok is really the only example of that we have right now, of a foreign government with a popular social media. So I have one chart on TikTok. These Rutgers guys took a look at it, and they compared Instagram, a U.S.-owned social media network, to TikTok, Chinese-owned. And what they found was in certain topics like popular culture and politics, there wasn't much difference. There's just twice as many users in Instagram as on TikTok, I think, and that's why it's 50%. But when you get to pro-Ukraine, the Uyghurs, or Tibet, Tiananmen Square, Chinese hot-button issues, for some strange reason, the TikTok posts just vanish. You just don't see information on that on TikTok. And I support the TikTok bill to ban this thing or make them sell it for this reason. Okay. Now, back to moderation. Traditionally, it's done by humans. You delete bad posts, child sexual abuse material, pornography, terrorist executions, all the stuff that we hear about there. And you can report it. It's the expensive part. And disinformation is hard to detect automatically. The site policies on it differ. And, how do you detect satire, right, with a computer program? That's pretty difficult. Twitter and X is an interesting case history because Elon Musk, he fired 1,500 content moderators to save money. I mean, he did save money, but he had to put in the community notes to sort of replace it. So it's a tricky problem to stop it. Now, we got to take a quick look at the geopolitics and see where this stuff is coming. But first, in my 2019 Cyber Talk, I said that our devices are excessively complex and hard to secure. Nation states have large budgets and staff, and they're very good at finding vulnerabilities. This is a fragment of the chart from my 2019 talk. It didn't have the red letters there, but this is what I said. Specific targets of nation states have very little hope if they're hacking you. You're not going to be able to resist them. And I said, why aren't more cyber attacks occurring? And there's various reasons. Some are trade partners don't want to make us mad because you can figure out who did that. Now, The TikTok bill identifies these four countries as foreign adversaries. It's probably pretty accurate. And this is as of the time the 2022 Ukraine war broke out with the Russian invasion. This is kind of how things were. North Korea is under heavy sanctions because from the 50s in the U.S. and after their nuclear test of 2006. And most countries in the world were honoring those. Iran was on and off with the nuclear deal, creating some unrest in the Mideast. They have some friends. North Korea had very few friends. China was sanctioned by Trump pretty heavily. And then Biden kind of did just the same thing. He kept most of those and added a lot worse. Russia, of course, had very few sanctions after invading Ukraine in 2014 and annexing Crimea. But what happened was when the war broke out, they had the gloves came off. And so what happened was Russia exhausted their domestic weapons supply after about a year of the war, and they needed artillery shells. They went to North Korea. So they're a big lifeline in North Korea right now. The economy is doing much better because of Russian trade. North Korea is not a big source of disinformation, but they're very big in cyber attacks. And so they really do an awful lot of ransomware. It's a big part of their budget. Iran sent a lot of drones to Russia. They're also trading with Russia, trying to help their economy out. China still does a lot of trade with us, obviously. But they're sending some equipment to Russia to help with the war. And we got some sanctions in 2024. We got some sanctions. Let me see if I can reconnect this thing. They sanctioned, they were sanctioned for some of the stuff related to the, what happened here? I went forward. Related to the war. And so that's a little tricky, but the disinformation is really going to come from Russia because they have nothing to lose. We're really sanctioning them. And China, you know, tries to get away with some stuff too. So these are probably the people we want to look at when we're looking for disinformation. Now I'm going to run through really fast some recent examples. Don't try to write down these URLs. Just get the talk at the end. There'll be a URL to download the whole talk if you want to look, follow them up. One way to do it is with influencers. So you can promote disinformation by finding influencers and paying them to promote your stuff. And this campaign tried to recruit German and French influencers, but that's illegal in Germany and France. It wasn't successful, but an Indian and a Brazilian seem to have agreed because they published some of the stuff on their social media accounts that the Russians were trying to get. It was traced back to Russian sources. And I think the German guy says, you know, don't go to TV, just spend the money on TikTok creators and YouTube creators, and you can get a lot of disinformation out there. Now, some disinformation is domestic, so political opponents. This took place in Brazil when there were some big floods, and some political opponents of the government were trying to make things go bad. This is from the Boston Globe, this particular article. The U.S. also does disinformation. It's not just a foreign thing. So in this case, the Voice of America reported that Twitter and Facebook took down a U.S. influence operation. They didn't really know who did it. Reuters attributed this one to the Pentagon, a secret anti-vax campaign that took place in the Philippines. Interesting article there. Now, this one was attributed to the CIA by Reuters, that Trump launched a CIA campaign against China. So there were some fake accounts. If you look over here, they invented some fake accounts to try to influence Chinese opinion. Here's a large-scale disinformation campaign that just came to people's attention very recently. This is from this year. 50,000 fake accounts were created, and 1 million posts were made by those accounts. You need some pretty good software to generate that many fake accounts. The victims may not expect that many accounts. A lot of Germans felt this was really the attitude in Germany. And it really was to try to reduce German support for Ukraine. Now, websites are often used to host disinformation. They can be linked from social media or a search engine. So the social media just points to the website. And there's a good article here from The Economist talking about how they rewrote real news stories with AI, like a ChatGPT kind of a thing. And the KGB published about 5,000 articles like this in 1981. You know, they didn't use ChatGPT. This AI did 19,000 in 1 month. Okay. And at the bottom is an OpenAI link where OpenAI themselves detected this event. Now, there's a lot of different tactics you can use to make a fake account more popular. And this one here is an example. This is Warwick Dunn. He's a very inspirational football player. And so they posted a tweet about him. Tony Dungy, well-known Christian football commentator, retweeted it. Then you put one out that ridicules Christians, you know, tries to stir up trouble, like this one on the right. And so that's a typical tactic. Now, another thing is they make a lot of fake local websites. This one here, you know, there's different things like DC Weekly, New York News Daily, the Chicago Chronicle. It makes it look like an established U.S. newspaper. This has been goons since 1895 or something, you know. But it's completely just happened in the last few months. So they're convincing, and then you link to them with the social media. Now, this guy is an interesting guy. He's a local Florida guy. And his enemies, he did some bad stuff, and he created websites to slander his enemies. And then he had to flee to Russia to avoid prosecution. So this article is from NBC News from May. But a follow-up from the BBC in July showed that now he was pivoting to from Ukraine to the U.S. election, I guess just in time for our election here. And he lives right in Russia, so you kind of know who he's working for. Now, this poor woman here is a Ukrainian YouTuber. She got her name, her image, and her body was appropriated by people who are speaking Mandarin, which she doesn't even speak. And they were promoting, you know, friendship between China and Russia, as well as advertisements for food. Because always, you know, people always want to make a buck, you know, even in the disinformation sphere. And this is a recent Economist article on how this works. If you want to try this yourself, what apps did they use? This Economist link there on the bottom actually can give you that. All right, well, let's take a look at the Christian perspective. I mean, knowingly sharing false news is known as lying, you know, to us. And, you know, I don't even have to read these verses. I mean, a lot of people have them pretty well memorized in this room, I would say, you know. You know, this quote from the NPR CEO went viral recently. Our reverence for the truth might be a distraction, you know. And, you know, Christians can't let reverence for the truth be a distraction. And this is a study here from the MIT Sloan School of Business. U.S. voters exhibit flexible morals when confronting misinformation. It said both Democrats and Republicans will permit the spreading of misinformation if it articulates a deeper truth. But, you know, we shouldn't be doing that as Christians, you know. Now, Nina Jankowicz is a Russian expert. An Eastern European expert. She wrote a pretty interesting book here. You might want to take a look. I recommend it. And it covered the post-Soviet activities of Russia in Eastern Europe. And basically, the Czech Center Against Terrorism and Hybrid Threats was set up to kind of combat this, and political attacks were made on it. It's still struggling along, but it's not as effective as it could be. Well, anyway, in April 27, 2022, Nina Jankowicz was announced as the head of the Disinformation Governance Board of Homeland Security. A lot of political attacks occurred there, and it was disbanded 4 months later. And she's now with this nonprofit. So, I mean, Nina wrote about how to lose the disinformation war in Eastern Europe, and then she lived it out in America, you know, a couple of years later. It's kind of ironic. And, you know, the Stanford Internet Observatory is also being dismantled due to a lot of political attacks. Interesting article here. So, conclusions. I mean, did Mark Twain predict our social media fate in 1898? You know, the reason we hold truth in such respect is because we have so little opportunity to get familiar with it. Yeah, possibly. You know, Tim Keller on the post-truth world, we had some objective external norms by which disputes between persons could be adjudicated. Now we find truth inside ourselves. I mean, we should be aware that social media is loaded with disinformation and AI-created nonsense. That's another talk. Powerful organizations like nation states are distributing it in ways that are not always obvious. Christians should be aware of the problem and try to verify before reposting. It won't be an easy problem to solve because people enjoy disinformation. As long as it's your disinformation, a good story, you know, that makes fun of your political opponents is, you know, it's gold. You know, it's great. You got to tell that one. And there's the link is down here at the bottom to download the whole talk if you want to follow up on some of these. Some very interesting things. Not only that, I actually have 8 more backup charts, which if you download the thing, you can go through all these, and they're all kind of comparable to what the 8 that we heard as examples of disinformation. So that's it.
All right, let's thank our speaker. And sorry about the technical problems that we're here, but we'll continue the conversation for as long as you're interested, because we're bumping up against lunch, so feel free to stay. But let's take a few questions for sure. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a statement that your presentation really piggybacks on Francis's presentation about how important it is to have a discourse to help decrease that bias, to come across and tell each other stories and be like, okay, where did you see this, and kind of parse out what happened and see where they've been getting information and how to reconcile that. So I wanted to thank you for doing that.
The second line from the bottom interests me. How do we verify before reposting?
Well, I mean, just like anything else, you need to try to find the original source of that. If it's on like Facebook, people will they'll basically repost someone else's posting, you know, in Facebook. And then you need to find, is there a reputable organization? And when it's like the Chicago Chronicle and you go to their websites, it's been in business since 1896, but you've never heard of it. Maybe you need to Google the Chicago Chronicle and look and try to, you can look into websites and see when they were set up. You can see when the URL was registered, you know, when the domain was registered. And a lot of these things are registered like all in a group in a few months before. When the Ukraine war takes a certain turn, you know, that's when all of a sudden they set up a bunch of these things. My backup charts, I have a lot of some really interesting nitty gritty stuff there, but you know, it's a 20-minute, that's for my 30-minute talk. Richard?
I can't tell you what they are, but there are websites that help identify original sources, even for images.
Yeah, right.
Google has one of them, and there's another one.
Yeah, when they first appeared, yeah.
There's Scopes, too.
Yeah. I mean, this is a leak here in Russian Foreign Intelligence Agency. Some of the backup charts are really pretty good, but they're a little bit too detailed. And some of them just flat out just tell you, this woman just admits all kinds of stuff about what Russia's doing. And, you know, when you read something like this, you kind of can you can discount RT, Russia Today.
You mentioned that some countries forbid super spreaders, you know, super generators of information. And how do they do that?
The question is, how do some countries really prevent super spreaders or a lot of stuff? Well, the simplest thing is that these countries that are like the 4 countries listed do not allow U.S. social media like Facebook and Instagram to be on there largely. They don't allow it at all, and they have their own versions. Russia has some of their own versions. You know, Russia's talking about banning YouTube. That's one they still have. But China has TikTok for us, but TikTok from China is a whole different thing. You cannot see those things, so they highly censor it. They have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands probably of censors in China, always censoring social media and everything and stopping it. And people know if they go too far, they can be arrested.
Yeah, I want to find out that, do you think that COVID amplified the concept of disinformation? Because prior to COVID, the concept of disinformation was not that globally known in terms of its impact or its significance.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is whether COVID has really caused a big increase in disinformation, and also this is a sign of the end time. So I'm not going to get into the prophecy. So I can't handle that one. It's outside my pay grade. But the COVID, yeah, it did cause. What happens is that people who are adversaries and they're for authoritarians, they like to show that the authoritarian system is better and less chaotic than democratic systems. And so they like to amplify whatever chaos we have, whatever's going on, you know, Black Lives Matter, elections, whenever people are getting excited, they try to pump us up. And COVID was an incredible opportunity to really create a lot of chaos because people were, you know, had all different opinions about it. So it certainly caused, the U.S. did it ourselves in my chart in the Philippines, evidently, created some disinformation there. So yeah, anything, any big upheaval, the disinformation people seem to be jumping on in recent years. Yeah. Well, you start with Igor Shusko's X account. You know, he's the guy who posted this. You could start that, and then you can trace it down. And if you speak, I have watched her stuff. So I think her stuff is really. I mean, I don't know if Russia Today has archives or not. I really don't like to go there, but yeah. But that, absolutely right. You got to always track those things down because some of them are just completely fake.
Yeah.
In the back. Jobs? You mean how disinformation will impact jobs? Well, I don't know. I mean, if you want to get a job in the information industry, disinformation industry, I think that's going up. I mean, I think it's just a matter of all the chaos that's going on around the world and in our country. We have more, but I don't really think that economically that there's necessarily that much effect of disinformation. People are going to have a lot of work to do, but nothing really jumps out at me as being a big economic effect, other than the fact that anything that's inefficient, anytime we disagree, can't come to agreement on laws, and we have extreme polarization, which is what a lot of the disinformation their purveyors are. That's what their goal is. It's obviously not going to benefit us, economically or job-wise or any other way.
Okay, this will be the last question.
Yeah, this one's just more of a statement. It's just looking at this, too, is it makes me think about John at the very end when he's talking about testing the spirits. I don't think he was meaning this, but it's like a nice scriptural thing to test
yeah.
the spirits.
Yeah, John. Testing the spirits, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, Thessalonians, test everything. That's a good way to end. So thank you,
yeah.
Tim.